Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need. Good morning, everybody. Can we take a moment and introduce ourselves to the audience, please? Rowan, will you start?
Absolutely. Hey, y'all. My name is Rowan. My pronouns are she and her. I am the executive director at the CFS Ontario, and I love organizing.
You sure do. Look at you, the executive director of the CFS. I said to Santiago, I'm like, I don't even know what position she is now. She's in the CFS and we're having her on. good for you, Rowan. Who would like to go next? Adaisy?
Cool. Hi, everyone. No, pretty close. My name is Adaisy. What am I? Campaigns and comms. I work at the Federation also. I'm the campaigns and comms staff person. I'm very excited to be having this conversation today with all of you. A lot to get into. So, woohoo. I'll pass it to Kayla, I guess.
Hi, my name is Kayla. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the government relations and policy coordinator. And I'd like to mention I went to the University of Guelph. So that's where a lot of my organizing experience comes from.
I don't like to admit my alma mater. I'm so ashamed of York University sometimes. Everyone is nodding along. Thank you for the introductions, Kayla. I kind of teased you when I met you earlier for our pre-chat. I thought government relations as a student organizer now, I do not envy your position. So I'm eager when we get to that part of the conversation, you can tell us what you had to go through so maybe we didn't have to. But we were talking before Wednesday, before the shit hit the fan, at Queen's Park. So I think folks listening, knowing they're talking to the CFS, might want to know why y'all were down at Queen's Park and then what happened.
Yeah, maybe I can start to talk a bit about that government relations piece. And I think maybe to start is that there's a lot of misconceptions that when we do government relations that we're doing it because we want to be on the good side of the government. Quite the opposite. We are a nonpartisan organization, but it's like every solid, strong campaign, especially when it comes to government decisions, has to have a government relations strategy. Like we pair our campaigns as like our top tier, and then government relations fits underneath because that's how we are going to win big for students. So I can talk about the announcement. So this announcement kind of exists within the grand scheme of government underfunding of education. And we've been saying this a lot, but when we say decades of underfunding, we truly mean decades. So the announcement from Doug Ford that happened this like past month in February, it's like a spot on that timeline. So Doug Ford announced a $6.4 billion investment into post-secondary, which is welcome. This is something that we've been annoyingly asking for many years, but at the same time, and in true Doug Ford fashion, paired it with something terrible. So they paired it with the OSAP changes, changing grants, the proportion of grants and loans. So 25% grants for students and 75% loans. And that's always an up to. So it's up to 25% grants. So it means that some students might receive 0 percentage in grants. And they also announced a 2% increase to tuition fees every year for the next 3 years. So it's kind of stealing out of the Liberal playbook because the Liberals had always been increasing tuition fees by 2% every year. So this is going to be terrible for students going forward. But this all started with Mike Harris in the 1990s. And the Mike Harris government was the last time we had a major conservative government in this province and kind of set the stage for the precarity of funding for post-secondary and the austerity measures. The OSAP program that we're seeing that Doug Ford just announced is actually the same OSAP program that Mike Harris had in the 1990s. And we know that that was not a successful program to get students into education. Kind of fast forward to years later when the Liberals were in government, they also continued this decades of underfunding, just funding it just enough so that people felt satisfied with what the Liberal Party had put forward. And we saw in 2016 that the Kathleen Wynne government, they amalgamated all these OSAP grants to come forward with a free tuition program. Now, we as the CFS, we know it wasn't free tuition. It was just a good grants program to be able to help students pay for their tuition fees, but it was not enough to actually make education free for everyone. Fast forward to 2018, we saw Doug Ford elected, and we saw him start right out of the gate changing education for the worst. He started with freedom of speech policies, which anyone who has studied political science or has read a book knows that this is not about freedom of speech. This is about controlling the narrative on campus. And those free speech policies, if institutions didn't adopt them, their funding was at risk. So we see Doug Ford continue to do this throughout the next couple of years. He also announced a $670 million cut to OSAP, which was the single largest cut to OSAP ever. And he also reversed the free tuition policy from the Liberals. He did freeze tuition fees, but this was kind of squeezing institutions at both sides because there was no new funding to provide to the institutions for this tuition freeze. And so what it meant that there was no more money coming in from domestic students. And so international students were charged through the roof to fund this tuition freeze. So it's all is creating the conditions for the super precarious education system that we're seeing. And this is why Doug Ford's continuing to mess things up and make it harder for students. I think I'll just end with, you know, the Student Choice Initiative was also announced at the same time. So Doug Ford is strategic. He's hitting students on all angles and he's pairing good news with bad news. And the Student Choice Initiative was ultimately right to work legislation, but for students' unions. And this is a time when students are deciding, do I pay my rent? Do I pay for groceries? So allowing students to opt out of their students' union, some students might have tried to opt out for, you know, to save $20 to $100. But this, again, was taking advantage of students' material conditions to benefit his conservative cronies. But I think this kind of sets the stage of, like, what's happening at the government policy. But I think we should also talk about what this meant for students on the ground.
Well, students have been under constant attack by Ford. So what was this point that we've reached?
Yeah, I think Kayla set the stage really well in that, like, the crisis, also we're going to say crisis so many times, but really there's no other word for it. Like, it is a crisis. But the crisis that we're in right now didn't happen overnight. But I do think students hit their tipping point. Like, it was just thing after thing after thing. And this most recent OSAP announcement, we saw students go completely ballistic, but maybe that's not the word I want to use. Students are really angry. Students were really frustrated. In response to this announcement. And like, we typically as the Federation, sometimes we often, and folks can let me know if they disagree or agree with this, but it sometimes feel like we are crying wolf, or it's like we're talking about the boogeyman, and students necessarily who are so bogged down by their current conditions are like, well, it can't be that bad. We're just trying to survive. We don't have time to talk about Mike Harris and the ways in which things could get better or worse or whatever. We just want to survive. And so we're often in a position to be like, no, this is really bad. No, this was really bad. But what was different about this time is that immediately students, it was like a match to a flame. Students were irate and outraged. And it kind of positioned us in this moment as a Federation to be like, okay, now it's time to organize, right? Like, we have been, you know, building the groundwork just as the government has been in the opposite way to prepare students for a moment like this one to be like, we actually don't have to accept these conditions on our campuses. Like, the moment that we are in is intentional in that, like, our political imaginations are so stunted on purpose so that so many students can't even like fathom or visualize a free and accessible education, or at the very least an education that doesn't leave them with thousands in debt. But it's great to see the moment that we're in because, you know, we're talking about organizing and students are actually like picking that up because they are so frustrated. So Doug Ford really fucked up with this one, with this OSAP announcement, because I think that combined with the tuition fee, the removal of the freeze, students are really on go, which I guess brings us to March 4th. But maybe we want to chat a little bit about 2018, 2019, and kind of the comparisons, because like Kayla mentioned, we were in a similar moment, similar but different. So Rowan, I don't know if I was on campus in 2019, but I was in my first year, so not an expert, but I'll pass it to Rowan.
I think I'll only add maybe 2 to 3 things. We'll see how it ends up going. I think like the first is that Kayla made it very clear that Doug Ford's government has had it out for students from the very beginning, from his very first elected term, and that's been consistent across all three terms. That's by no means a coincidence. That speaks to the level of dissent and the level of power that students actually have on their campuses. Like, Doug Ford's government sees students as a threat, and what he's done is intentionally destabilize our campuses in a multitude of different ways, by underfunding them, by cutting programs that are essential to critical thought and discourse on campuses, by firing mass layoffs in terms of instructors and support services, by destabilizing student unions, the very same organizations that can be organizing hubs on campuses and can channel and like harness that energy that exists, and also by targeting OSAP. And the second piece that I wanted to compare is that we saw a very similar response and reaction. So to Adese's point around, like, sometimes we feel like the boy who cried wolf. Students are exhausted. They're working, they're studying, they're living a multitude of different identities, and their lives are hectic. And so it can be hard to pay attention to all of the pieces. But such a significant cut to OSAP is like a really glaring example. And they were immediately activated and organized in 2018 and 2019. But the pandemic happened, and we weren't able to harness that energy into like a longevity and a sustained movement and a building. But that energy existed then, and that energy exists now, like Adese was mentioning. And I think that speaks to, firstly, the inaccessibility of education across this province, and also the working class nature of students across this province. As Doug Ford moves to make education more privatized and something that is truly only accessible to the wealthy, it's clear that that's not actually the demographic of students on campuses across the board. And while he's trying to shut us out, they're very clearly resisting that shutting out, and they want to pursue higher education in a multitude of different ways. And OSAP is one of the only avenues for them to do that, which is why he's targeting it. So those are only some of the additions I wanted to make.
You would think with all the attacks on students and then ramping it up, he wouldn't then use such open disdain to address the thousands of complaints that he's, you know, students are finding the time. You know, they have been calling and emailing him and complaining, and his response was, don't take basket weaving courses, mocks post-secondary education. No one wasted any time pointing out that his family doesn't have a great history with post-secondary education. And what a confusing time for students, too, who are reading job applications and the requirements that they expect for people to have, and then to make it more expensive and less accessible all at the same time. Like, no one even knows what the right thing is to do at a high school anymore with this crazy economy. But how do you organize in that atmosphere and still demonstrate that you're a threat to Ford when students are having to navigate all of this?
Well, I think we believe, and maybe there's an element of DeLulu here, we think he hates us, and we think some of this feels like a personal attack, because in 2019, when the Student Choice Initiative happened, there was really coded language that he would use in regards to the attack on student unions. The crazy Marxists, you know, we have to squash these students on campus, which, crazy Marxists, it applies sometimes. We'll take it for some of us. But at the end of the day, like, what we've been trying to impress on students and what we try not to forget is that, like, this doesn't happen by accident. I think that a lot of the times there's an element of like, oh, he just doesn't understand, or he's out of touch. No, he's out of touch, but it's not a joke. Like, we didn't trip and fall into this. Like, this is a direct attack on education, because he knows it's those poor students that are going to get frustrated and fed up and say, actually, no, I don't want the $2 and I wish I scraped together for my education to fund weapons and arms. I don't want the $2 and I wish I scraped together to go into, you know, climate injustice and fossil fuels and so on and so forth. And so it's very intentional things that he's doing, from the crazy Marxist language to the timing of these announcements. Like, we saw Bill 33, which is similar to the SCI, but ultimately it's just a policy that seeks to disrupt and sort of dismantle and attack student unions and student organizations. We saw that happen in the summer, right before they went on vacations. Campuses are a ghost town in the summer, right? Like, there's no students, and that's intentional. Similarly, the OSAP and tuition fee announcement happened during reading week, when people, you know, leave their crappy apartments where there's like 10 people to a room and try to go back home. And so he's very intentional with the things that he's doing. And it's because he knows students are a threat, right? Like, even moving separately from the successful legal challenge, which I don't think he ever got over it. Like that is a personal wound to him, which is great. And we like to bring it up all the time. But even moving beyond the student choice initiative, we saw what the government's response was to the encampments on campuses. And of course, there's so many political critiques that we can have and we do have about the nature of that organizing and ways in which we can improve. At the end of the day, that was students taking political action and like sort of waking up post-pandemic, because I don't think it ever really went away, so on and so forth. That's a separate conversation. But that was students really reawakening political organizing and political action on campuses. And so Doug Ford, every move he's made and every move this government has made has been intentional to quash dissent and to just really shut students down. I think what he's failing to realize is that like, it's just not working. It's really not working. It's the same playbook. And students are so, so frustrated. And I think this current moment we're in with the cost of living and just no student being able to have a job. Like youth unemployment is so, so high right now. Students are hungry. Students are facing precarious housing. At this point, it's like, if I'm already losing everything, what else do I have to lose? If what else, you know, like what else is keeping me from organizing? And we saw so much of that on Wednesday and in response to the state violence, but maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. So every move he has made has been intentional. And I think students are starting to see the pattern, because even some of the basket weaving language, which is incredibly racist, to point that out, but even some of the basket weaving language and the contrast against his things about, well, students should take in demand jobs. There are a number of engineering students, and like I'm a STEM student, right? And I will say STEM students suck. Like we get a bad rap and we deserve our bad rap. I'm not going to lie. But you're starting to now see engineering students, you know, STEM students be like, well, we are in these in-demand programs. There's no jobs for us either. A, and B, we also can't afford to finish these in-demand programs. And these are students who are like the pride and joy of their institutions, right? These engineering programs, these business programs at these institutions, like, ugh, this is the reason we exist. Even they are saying that at the end of the day, education isn't accessible to me as well. And so this government is really creating a perfect storm for students to say, like, we have had enough just across the board.
One thing I wanted to add in, kind of building off this idea that, you know, people need to go into STEM, people need to go into these programs, like Doug Ford had said. We heard a lot from nursing students where like they are applying for OSAP and because they need it, and they're going into nursing because there's a demand for it, but they also are struggling to find nursing jobs because Doug Ford is cutting everything. Like, it's not just education, he's also cutting public health care. And another piece I wanted to add is that, you know, Doug Ford's saying all this to activate his base, and his base is like rural conservative Ontario. But even, you know, seeing folks from my hometown, they're also upset about this because they're thinking this is going to burden their children from accessing education. So I think Doug Ford's really kind of like painted himself into a corner thinking that this was going to like, you know, get more of his supporters on his side. But I think a lot of people do recognize the importance of OSAP, and it's not just students who recognize that importance, but it's also their family and communities. A lot of times for like Ontario, people in Ontario, they're like, well, I did everything right. I worked a job when I was in high school. I was getting paid student minimum wage, which is less. You know, I'm saving up all my money. I'm working several jobs to be able to afford this, and I still can't afford it. So I think that's another piece that's really agitating students, is that they're like, I did everything Doug Ford told me to do, and now he's still blaming me for the issue. And he's blaming students for OSAP fraud, which is really just a smallest percentage of the like 400,000 students who actually access OSAP. So I think that's what's also agitating people, is like they're tired of being blamed for the inaccessibility of these programs when it's the conservative government who's actively always trying to make it more inaccessible.
It's also like, we don't want to hear it when it comes to OSAP fraud. Like, this government is so corrupt and is just like blowing money out the ass. Like, you of all people are not allowed to talk about students buying God knows what with their OSAP. Like, also OSAP money goes straight to your institution. And because the tuition fees are so high, like you're maybe getting several hundred dollars that you can put towards getting a secondhand laptop. Like, please, Doug, save it. Nobody wants to hear it. I don't even know what we were going to say, but it is a sticking point. I'm still mad about the Science Center. Nobody cares what he has to say when it comes to OSAP fraud.
Well, that's the same tactic they use for welfare, right? They try to criminalize and demonize those that accept any kind of handouts and then manufacture problems, and there's solutions that wouldn't even solve those problems. But to me, it just sounds like also a disaster waiting to happen. I'm not an economist, but they've lost a lot of the income that they used to exploit out of international students. They're also going to have lower enrollment. I mean, they're gaining on tuition, and they will get some more money back because it'll be loans, not grants. But that's years down the road. And that's to the government, not the institution in the end, those loans. So these institutions are going to deteriorate, right? Like the post-secondary institutions are surely going to hit some sort of financial breaking point as well. We're already seeing them strip programs, right? I was in the liberal arts. Not exactly what Ford is talking about, but, you know, it is one of those lesser thought of programs that focuses on critical thought that they would rather students not have. And historically, you definitely make the case that he would have a grudge for you, but you enjoy talking about it so much. And I think it's important if you could spend a little bit more time on Bill 33 and the previous attacks and the court case that you won, because when that went down, and like most of us were right, that was like testing ground for what he would try on organized labor as well, right? He hates other people too. He doesn't like progressive unions. These are things that other folks organizing can learn from. So if you want to talk about how he first came after student unions and tried to weaken the movement, not just make education inaccessible, but those Marxist dens, you know, how he went after them. Because, yeah, that's a bit of a blueprint folks are going to likely see repeated, right?
I think I might nerd out a little bit. So maybe stick with me, my friends, and I'm sorry if it starts to ramble a little bit. Earlier, we had mentioned the free speech policy, and it feels critical for me to mention the role that Palestine organizing plays into all of this, all of these attacks from the Ford government, because the free speech policy, some folks might remember that in 2019, an Israeli occupation soldier facilitated a talk at York University, and the students immediately shut it down. I had been an organizer on that campus for many years at that point, and I had never witnessed such a rapid, swift response. There's one main hall at York University called Very Hall, and the institution has done everything to make it as inaccessible as possible to protest there, because there's been a legacy of student protests in that space. Insofar as building desks and stages in the middle of it so that students have less space, but that's a tangent. The point is that students rapidly organized against that talk, and they managed to shut it down. And it very quickly made national media, with many politicians, including Doug Ford, weighing in. There was only about a 2-week span between the announcement of the free speech policy and that talk and protest happening at York University. So if I'm remembering correctly, the free speech policy did come first, but that protest ended up being the exact reason that they managed to push it forward and implemented a timeline of January for institutions to comply, otherwise they would risk funding. And so that's my first example. Very shortly afterwards was when the Student Choice Initiative was released, and we also saw institutions like York University enlist justices of the court to do independent reviews of organizing and student responses on campuses in an attempt to develop policies to regulate student organizing on campuses and make that more complicated and difficult. And so we're seeing this very large scale and also very minor scale. Like, if you were on a campus in 2019, any campus, you would have been able to poster anywhere the hell that you wanted. It did not matter. And now we're seeing such distinct, specific regulations around how you're able to promote events, book events, book spaces for events, and that relates to the free speech policy, that relates to the Student Choice Initiative, that relates to the aftermath of Palestine organizing on a variety of different campuses in that era of student organizing. But the Student Choice Initiative in particular, like we talked about, he justified in a cost of living crisis at the time as an opportunity for students to save money. So rather than investing in post-secondary education, rather than really enhancing and moving forward the conditions of students on campuses, he pinpointed student levy fees that are introduced through referendum, through student votes, because they're services that are life-saving for students, that are deliberated upon and introduced by students, that are run and serviced by students, because the administrations don't want to take on that labor. We're talking food support centers, we're talking academic support centers, we're talking legal services for students that need some of that help. We're talking about gender and women's studies spaces, and so queer spaces, like all of the most marginalized groups that need avenues to organize on campus, took it upon themselves through their student unions and through their student organizations generally to build those spaces independent of the institution, knowing that they could never rely on the institution for such support. And then the Ford government was like, here's an opportunity to save some money. We're going to freeze your tuition, but also look at all of those levies. You are spending, just blowing up and amplifying the amounts to unrealistic standards, which is actually something I want to come back to when they talk about their tuition fee increase now and how they're breaking that down for people. But they introduced the SCI and they said these crazy Marxist student unions, they need to be controlled. They don't do anything for students. All they do is protest on campus. There's nothing tangible there. And so the CFS was very quick to establish both an organizing strategy on campuses, because that was in line with the OSAP cuts. Again, the energy was already there. And it was an opportunity for us to engage students on the role of a students' union, because so many students engage these services without actually realizing that it's a students' union, without actually realizing that it's decades of student organizing and work that have gone into the creation of these services. And so what we saw was much more awareness of like, oh, this is a space to protect me. And actually, I'm not going to opt out. I don't want to defund my students' union. I want to protect my students' union through all of this organizing. And so the CFS was very quick to implement an organizing strategy and also a legal strategy, because they had implemented the SCI as a, I never fail to mispronounce this word, but basically a ministry directive. And so it wasn't legislation. It wasn't any real legal document. It was just the minister being like, I think you guys should do this. You're going to make this opt-outable fees, which isn't how things work. And so the CFS took the government to court on the basis of it being not a legal means of putting forward this policy. They were attempting to supersede a number of legislation that applied to how institutions are run, the autonomy of institutions, and also likewise the autonomy of student unions on those institutions through referendums, not to get into the technical pieces. And so we won. We won very clearly. But the government, to Adese's point earlier, Doug Ford's a sore loser. He hates to lose, even though he keeps losing in court. And so he appealed the decision in hopes of the SCI policy making a return. And so we did it again. We ran it back and we said, okay, sure, we're going to meet you in the appeals court. And we won for a second time in a row. And like I said, this was all just before the pandemic. And the energy that students had was very much palpable. Like that was a real tangible victory in his first term as the Ford government. Like we saw that we could win very, very clearly. And we saw the intersection between strategies, like a multitude of strategies were in play, and we needed to build power on our campuses through organizing. And we also needed to take him to court. Like both of those things supported one another. And that's how we saw that victory come to fruition. But then the pandemic hit. He took some time to learn from his mistakes, and he started attacking some of the other public services in the meantime. And then he came back with Bill 33. And again, I bring back the Palestine organizing conversation, because Bill 33 followed a year and a half, 2 years of really critical organizing on campuses against the genocide. We saw the resurgence of divestment campaigns on campuses for the first time in many, many years. The conversation of ethical investments at a post-secondary institution, and the fact that our institutions are investing quite clearly in arms manufacturers and banks and fossil fuel companies that are worsening and furthering the climate crisis. And they were doing really great things. And to Adese's point, like we can deep dive on that in a completely separate conversation in terms of losing the recipes and losing the skills to organize on campuses, but figuring out how to do it anyways in that moment, because that's what was required of us as a student movement. The genocide was asking us to rise as students. Palestinians in Palestine were asking us to rise as students, and people were meeting that call through encampments and otherwise. And Doug Ford didn't like that. And he introduced Bill 33 and, like I said, learned from all of his mistakes, made sure that this was every legal way possible. It was like soundproof or whatever the word is that I'm actually trying to use. Airtight was the word I was trying to use in terms of putting forward this legislation, ramming it through the summer months. And so skipping consultations, skipping readings, but just making sure that they met the bare minimum threshold for speaking within the legislature. And Bill 33 targeted merit-based admissions, extremely coded language. What does merit-based admissions mean when admissions are already based on merit? We can only assume that that is dog whistle language. You're a racist prick, and that's really what you're trying to say. Targeting once again, levies, and I'm forgetting the language, so maybe Kayla, you can hop in, but essentially student unions, he's after us once again, and then also research excellence, which is exceptionally vague language, paired with a renaming of the ministry that oversees post-secondary education, and one can only assume that, again, this is further targeting courses on humanities and targeting what students are able to actually invest in and research and further, which I know that actually Kayla did want to talk about. So maybe I'll pass it to you.
Yeah. Thanks for one. I think the other interesting thing about Bill 33 is that, like, yeah, Doug Ford has made this airtight. You know, he's actually rewritten the law to make the Student Choice Initiative legal. So, but it's this optional fees still have the same contradictions as before. So during the Student Choice Initiative, somebody could opt out of their student union, but they can't opt out of the health and dental, which is interesting because health and dental, there's a whole industry that makes money off of student health and dental plans. And I'm talking like billions of dollars. And so the contradiction, though, was that your student union negotiates that health and dental a contract, but you could opt out of the student union, but not the health and dental. So it was like the students who are doing the direct advocacy on your campus were not considered essential, but the athletic center, so essential to the administration, you know, so there's a lot of contradictions there. In terms of like research security, it's interesting to see this come forward. A lot of graduate students are saying this is not necessary. Institutions have their own research security policy. What we're predicting, though, is that the ministry is going to come up with a set standard that institutions will have to follow. And this could mean less money for graduate research, less money for particular research. And I think what we can predict, because we've seen this trend, that's going to be less research for humanities, less research for justice, less research for climate justice. And this is, again, trying to suppress the research that students do that is really important to our different communities. So this is actually also all part of a larger plan from the government. This is not necessarily from what they've said, but what we're predicting is going to happen based off of the trends of the past couple of years. But we're going to see major downsizing of institutions. There might even be amalgamations of institutions. There's been major, massive layoffs when it comes to especially the college sector. We saw 10,000 workers, if not more, because they're continuing to be laid off from colleges. So we're seeing the further privatization of education, and eliminating the student unions is like step one in that Doug Ford's plan to privatize education so that his friends, his corporate donors can make a lot of money off of private education. So this is a scary time for students, but I think that's why the organizing is so important and so key, is that we need to capture this moment and do things now, because there's only roughly 48 days left of the winter semester before students, you know, head off to summer semester, or maybe, you know, they take the summer off. So it's really critical now that we do really key organizing and be really strategic.
So let's talk about that. You folks chose to go down to Queen's Park on March 4th. That was just 2 days ago. You are still feeling it. What did you expect to get out of Wednesday?
Honestly, I think Wednesday really met, if not exceeded, our expectations up until the very end, but we'll get there. We saw thousands of students come out, and we saw thousands of students ready to rally at Queen's Park, which was amazing. I mean, again, like, we can talk about what organizing has looked like on campuses and the very many attacks and attempts to, like, get rid of it. And so to see that many students come out, to see contingents, to see feeder rallies, to see people really, really ready to highlight their rage and frustration was so amazing, honestly. There are moments when you do this where you wonder, like, is it possible? Are students, you know, ready to organize? And I think Wednesday and just like the last few weeks has been a reminder that it's always possible and students are ready to organize. It's our responsibility and privilege to be able to kind of facilitate that and be the provincial student union. So Wednesday was great. Wednesday really, really was amazing. I think what was really awesome as well is the number of non-students. So like community, high school, the babies were there too, which is great. You know, parents, labor, we could go all day about how important it is, you know, students and workers. And we are so, so, so proud and happy to have labor partners like OPSU, like QP. You know, we saw ETFO. So I'm using a lot of acronyms. Sorry.
Most of our audience will know what those are.
Okay, great. Yeah, love it. Getting into the traditional media where they're like, can you explain what ETFO is? It's like, get a grip, Google it. But anyways, so ETFO, you know, OSSTF, just like a lot of our labor partners. And for the past year, it's been great for the Federation to sort of reemerge and re-strengthen those relationships. Because again, for a while, you know, we as in this movement, things were kind of like isolated and we were waiting to see what would happen. And so now what would happen has happened and we're up against it. It's so great to see everyone come out together and really understand that, like, whether it's healthcare, whether it's nurses, whether it's, you know, college faculty layoffs, whether it's us as students, like, we are all under attack together. And I think for students as well, one thing that I was talking to Kayla about is that, like, a lot of the times students, we can exist in a bubble, to speak really frankly. And like, we can get into this mindset that like our campuses protect us. And at the end of the day, Wednesday was both a stark and like visceral reminder, but also like a good reminder that like, no, there is no movement that is isolated from ours. Like, we're talking about student organizing, and that is Palestine organizing. That is workers organizing. That is, you know, the climate crisis. That's all of it. And like, an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. And so to see students, you know, buy into that so quickly and so fully. You know, we had someone from Migrant Workers, and there has been an intentional attempt to sort of divide international students and domestic students and like migrants generally, and sort of blame them for the crisis that we're in. And so to see students reject that, like, truly, I cannot overstate how amazing Wednesday was. And so this is where we say, fuck you, Toronto Police Services, for trying to ruin it for us. But you didn't, because we will be back on March 24th. And even the response to that, like, truly, the students will be okay. And like, this is our fight to win. And I think Wednesday was a really great reminder. There are things to address. We're going to talk about some of the reactionary tendencies of students as well, and how we can move through, you know, grounding our politics and our organizing. But like, this is our fight to win. And we had thousands on Wednesday. I want 10K on the 24th. I'm saying it out loud everywhere so that I can manifest it. It will happen. No, but Wednesday was amazing. Wednesday was great. Also, this is so irrelevant, but the weather, like, everything was on our side, truly. Like, it all lined up perfectly in favor for us. And it was great to see that happening. So I think what was also, like, we have students there who would consider themselves leftists and progressives, and like, who are like, no, I've got this organizing thing down pat. And then we have just like a random, like, baby student who's in their first year and is like, I actually don't know what you guys are on about, but I'm happy to be here and I'm ready to lock in. Give me a flyer. I'm ready to learn more. And so like, even just the language of like divestment, and we had like our drop fees, not bombs, materials out there, and students being like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm ready to learn and I'm willing to engage that and I'm willing to draw those connections, was really great to see, because we never want to have our movement be in isolation. Like, yeah, we're talking about OSAB, but what we're actually talking about is this government trying to kill us all and trying to price us all out of anything. And that can never be separated from the attacks that we see, you know, in Ontario across all sectors, but also the ways in which our money funds that happening globally. So I could go on for forever. I loved Wednesday. Mwah. It was beautiful, wonderful, amazing. Shout out to everyone who showed out and showed up to support. And fuck you, Toronto Police Services. that's pretty much all I have now on that. We can get into the TPS of it all, but maybe we'll talk more about organizing stuff. And before we, they're like so not important. They get like the smallest part.
Let's spend a minute on that police reaction, because that's going to impact some students, especially the babies, right? What is the response going to be to that? Especially when we're calling out all these big unions that promised to stand behind the encampments when they were torn down. So, like, for us, for people who didn't experience it, normally the reaction should be pretty heavy-footed to cops beating up on students. So let's talk about, like, one, what that did to you folks and the response to people who did just wander into this kind of following you to get to learn more. And then, whoa, like, you know, are met with incredible police violence. That may be confusing to some folks who haven't been organizing for Palestine. I guess everyone else, I mean, those folks would have been expecting it, right?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things I want to say. I think the first is that if you're not paying attention, then I need you to know that this is in fact the new reality for this city. Like, this is what the TPS is now. And we as organizers, we as people who seek to organize and seek to build out movements, need to be prepared for the worst of the worst coming from TPS, because all our eggs were in a row. Like, this was not, if we're going to talk about what kind of protest this was, and I'm not getting into the respectability politics piece of it, we had high school kids there. Like, we had, to your point, Jessa, like, there were union folks there. Like, this, there was a stage, for goodness sake. Like, this was not the kind of action where we would expect such rapid brute force from police. And I think in terms of the response, I'm really, like, pleased and reassured to see. Like, we were quite concerned that afternoon. We were like, students are going to get scared. What about the 24th? How do we make sure that we are taking on the role of educating people on how we keep one another safe, on how you keep yourself safe at these actions, knowing that this is what we're now up against? But the students are about it. Like, they saw clear as day that the TPS was wild. It was a completely disproportionate response. And I think what we're seeing from traditional media and some subsects of the community and students is that they're expecting us to condemn some of the actions that went down. They're expecting us to condemn vandalism, LOL, that's funny. They're expecting us to be like, no, they shouldn't have vandalized. And there's absolutely no scenario where we as the Federation are going to condemn students for protesting and for expressing their justified rage against a government that is treating them in dust. Like, again, this government wants us dead. This government wants us uneducated. This government wants us poor. And sure, some students are going to vandalize. I will never condemn that. That is not in the realm of possibilities. What I will condemn is TPS's disproportionate force. Like, students were being dragged through the mud. There's that one video that's going viral. Like, people are seeing the connections for the first time. And some responses are like, what, an OSAP rally? And other responses are very clear as day, like, ACAB, this is what the cops are about. They only protect property. They're protecting Queen's Park. They're in Doug Ford's back pocket. And this is exactly why we need to show up and show out in larger numbers next time. And so I think we, as always, like, we exist on a spectrum. And as provincial organizers in particular, we have the very difficult job of meeting people at all ends of that spectrum. And so there were students that were ready to riot when police forces were pulling us down last time or this Wednesday. And there were also students who were scared and who were very confused about what was happening. And it was on us to respond appropriately and make sure that people were as safe as possible. Two individuals did end up getting arrested, but they were released Wednesday evening. We managed to meet them at the division and facilitate legal support for them. And so I want to say very clearly that, like, the Federation and the folks that are within the Federation have witnessed this and have been on the front lines for Palestine and for other movements in the last 2.5 years. And we're prepared to build out this skill set for our membership in order to keep them safe as we take on this fight for a much longer end. There will be critiques of how that might happen, what's important is that we're building out spaces where those critiques can happen in a good way, and we're not punching down on one another, but we are in fact building a united space and a united movement to take on the threats. The TPS is an extension of the state, and we've spent the last hour talking about how the state wants students to lose, the state wants students demoralized, the state wants students scared and distanced from one another. And I think what we're seeing very clearly is that the students want the opposite of that. And that's honestly, like, not to be corny, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful and it's reassuring, and it's quite hopeful for the fight that is ahead.
Santiago, that's jail support from the CFS, right?
I think a really important, so I'm so sorry to interrupt, a really important addition, something we didn't mention, read the Bill 33. The other part of the bill actually introduces police into elementary and high schools and into their classrooms. And so to our point earlier and to what Rowan said, this is the new normal. Like, our government is making it so very clear that the armed wing of the state seeks to hurt us all. And just to see so plainly what we have been saying, Ree, just like the through line of education, like, these are the same police that you are going to introduce into classrooms of Black and Brown and Indigenous and marginalized students are the same police brutalizing students at a protest. And so I think what's exciting about this moment is that we now get to push forward the political lines of a student movement that can at times waffle a bit. Like, no, we are absolutely an abolitionist student movement. And we get to define what that means for us, because obviously no one ever wants to see police violence. But now there is no equivocation about whether or not that the armed wing of the state is attacking us too. Like, this is an attack on all of us. And so we get to determine, like Rowan said, the skills, and we get to determine what it means to respond, but we also get to clarify our principles and clarify our lines. Like, we reject the presence of police at our protests and our classrooms, on our campuses, and that's security, that's special constables, give me a break, that's all of it, right? And so it's amazing to see, again, just students draw those connections and be terrified, because it's terrifying when police are there with guns at a protest when we're chanting hands off our education, but also say, you know what, I'm not going to let that fear stop me from coming out on the 24th. Like, we keep us safe. Truly, we get to embody what that means and define that for ourselves as students. And so I think there's a really hopeful moment that we're in, and I'm excited to see it grow and take wins and build into something sustainable, because ultimately, like, there is no aspect of this we can leave behind. And so when we reject TPS presence at our protest, we also mean we reject them in the classrooms of the children that this government is trying to, you know, erase. We reject them off of our campuses. You know, we do not want to see police. We do not want to see the state win, and we're not going to allow it. Okay, now I'm done. Sorry.
The only thing I wanted to add in, because I agree with everything that's been said so far, but is that I think, connecting it back to the government, I think it's really interesting that Doug Ford and the Ontario government seems to have so much money for the OPP. They have so much money for city cops, but they somehow don't have any money to sustain the OSAP program. They don't have money to fund education. They don't have money to fund gender studies at institutions. So I think, like, this goes to show that connecting back to the larger government is that this is all part of their plan to make sure that students don't dissent, students don't show up, so that they can continue their playbook of funding violent institutions rather than funding education.
Okay, so I'm going to be that person I promised I would be. One tool organized labor always has at their disposal that we always wish they used more, right? Especially as armchair political commentators, is strike, general strike, right? Every time Doug Ford gets really, really bad, we yell it at the top of our lungs. We want labor to come to our rescue. But studying social movements, we know students also might be able to help kickstart a larger movement, right? Anti-fascist, anti-imperialist movement. Why not a student strike? Let's talk about the practicality, the reality of a student strike. Because, you know, as student union organizers, surely the tankies amongst you, the leftists amongst you are whispering in your ear, or a little louder, come on, like, you know, call a strike already. Where's your backbone? You know, like, you face pressures, not just to condemn vandalism, right? Like that spectrum you talked about. what can we offer? Explain where the student movement is at right now, and then we can get into how you will win, right? How we will win. But what do you have to say to those strike now?
I think the first thing that we have to say is us too. You're not special. We want one too. It is so funny, honestly, to like, why would you call a student strike? Babe, I want to. I really do. But no, I think in all seriousness, like Rowan said earlier, the Provincial Student Union and the Federation exists in a great position, but sometimes in the most annoying position, in that we represent 350,000 students across Ontario. And that means like, Kayla, I love you, but like white girls like Kayla from small town Ontario, and then like inner city Black kids like myself, you know, from like the heart of Jane and Finch, right? And so trying to address all of those political contexts and create a through line in which we're not leaving people behind, and which we are also not entertaining failed tactics that our movement cannot afford right now, right? Because we are in a pivotal position, and I talked earlier about how beautiful and wonderful it is, but it's also like really important that we don't F this up. Like really, really, really important. I think both for the state of education, but also for people's like morale, for lack of a better word, for people's like hope and belief that we will and win and we can win. And so we are no strangers to the conversation of a strike. And it is something that we are absolutely like engaging seriously. I think to speak so frankly, our student unions aren't where they used to be, right? Like if I could look at some of our strongest student unions and say, you know what, we'll call a strike tomorrow. Maybe it'll take us a few weeks to get situated, but we know that X union will get on it and Y union will get on it and so on and so forth. Then sure, we'd go out there and we'd go out on a limb and let the chips fall where they may, but the chips won't fall. The chips are in the bag. Our student unions have lost a lot of recipes, and I don't want to position it as though they just suck and that's their choosing to suck. But I think there's an element of it we saw the last few years, and we highlighted Doug Ford's attack have made a tangible impact on our student unions, on the ways that they organize, on their understanding that they have to organize. And so we cannot do something that will place the most marginalized students with no protections and with no resources. I also think, again, like we 100% want a strike. We know that that's not going to happen with just us as the students, right? Like the question of labor and the conversation around labor is a really big one, but anything that we would have to do as students would be something that has to align and would align with the workers. And I know there's always a lot of like, Quebec shouldn't strike, Quebec shouldn't strike. Yeah, Quebec shouldn't strike. That took years, right? And this is not to say that I think sometimes people hear us say that and they think that means we're saying no. We're not saying no. It is because of our belief in a yes that we want to do it sustainably, and we want to do it in a way that is going to move us further and not take us backwards. I think if I want to be a little bit of a hater and a little bit critical, I think there's a bit of a valorization of the tactic as opposed to the goal. Because a lot of the times in these conversations, it's like, okay, you want us to call a strike. We are not above critique as the Federation. Let's have this conversation. You want us to call a strike. What are our goals? What are our demands? And that's where the conversation kind of starts to get a little shaky, right? And so I want to be so clear in that the Federation has been building politically for this moment, like even just the moment we're in right now. Doesn't happen magically overnight that thousands of students come to Queen's Park, right? Like we have been lying in wait and setting the groundwork, but it's stones. I don't know what I'm doing. Setting the stones and the groundwork to be able to even harness this moment. And so we want to be critical. We want to move strategically. I think that's an important piece here. And we want to ensure that like when we organize, we're doing it in a way that's sustainable and also effective. And so the strike question, there's so many pieces to it. But ultimately, yeah, it's a tactic that we know works and will work, which is why we have to treat it with the care of doing it so intentionally, I think is where we're at. I can talk a little bit about like the national context in terms of like just across the country and what things are looking like. But I also know that this is Rowan's favorite topic. We go back and forth in a good way about this all the time. So maybe Rowan, you want to jump in? We go back and forth about everything. So it actually doesn't mean much, but Rowan, go ahead.
That's just kind of the dynamic. Jessa, do you want to say something?
Well, just I think something just that you wanted to hit on, I just wanted a reminder that, like, what would a student strike even look like, right? Like, what is that? We know what a worker strike looked like sometimes, because a general strike for one day also doesn't do shit either, right? We've seen that. So what is it you think people are asking for, and what is it, you know, you think would be actually effective?
Thank you. That's actually exactly what I wanted to talk about. I think, like, we are under no illusions that when living in the heart of empire, when living in a province that is under a government like Doug Ford's government, that's in bed with the billionaires, that is very much prioritizing profit over people, the most effective tactic is, in fact, to disrupt that flow of capital, and in the context of students, also that flow in academic contribution on our campuses, because that is a flow of capital in its own way. And so when we're talking about a strike, we need to be very clear about what we mean about a strike. We mean withdrawing all labor across all levels. We mean not attending our classes. We mean, in some cases, not paying our tuition fees when they're due and actively withholding those fees as a means and pushing forward this tactic in a sustainable manner. That's not what people are talking about right now. People are saying students strike when they mean protest and a rally outside in their quad. And those are exactly, and that's an effective tactic. But a walkout is a walkout. A student strike is a student strike. And those are realms and worlds apart. And so when we're talking about calling for a student strike, we're very clear on what that tactic is, what it means, and what it would require in an organizational capacity, in a mobilization capacity, to sustain in an effective manner. I think one comparison that I want to very clearly make is that for the success of a student strike, it can't just be the loud minority that's ready to student strike at any given moment. It requires every student's buy-in, and it requires all of us to be able to participate in a capacity that makes sense. We've chatted quite a bit about international students and the role that they've played on our campuses for a significant amount of time. Are we considering what the impact is on international students? Are we prepared to keep international students safe when they have permits to exist here that would be at risk if they were to participate in a student strike? Are we prepared for administrative and government repression when it comes to fines that are going to come down? Because those are inevitable when you push forward such a successful tactic. These are all resources and mechanisms that labor unions already have in place and are able to protect them when participating in a student strike. But also the difference is that we can look to the Air Canada strike, we can look to the Canada Post strike. We saw historic votes, like we saw over 90% margins of people actually coming out and saying, yes, I want to strike with my union. That's not comparable to a couple thousand students. It's a beautiful thing and a great thing to see a couple thousand students come out to vote and vote yes. But that doesn't mean that we're in a position to strike. And that doesn't mean we're in a position to strike in a successful manner. And that definitely does not mean that we're on the same page about what a student strike actually means. And so those are some of the pieces that I'm seeing very clearly play out. And to Adese's point, like, it's a very sensationalized tactic. And I don't doubt that it actually can be empowering. Like, to say we're going to strike and to participate in that can be an empowering piece for a student that's just getting engaged. But we also have students that are talking about our protest saying, oh, this is during my class time, I can't make it. And so the gap between a protest and a sustained strike is a very, very big one. And while we would love to, like, truly nobody wants a student strike more than us. I've been so annoying in my office. Like, I was on the mic at the Federation before I was even part of the Federation talking about student strikes, but we're just not there yet. And to be able to win, to say that we're not there yet is not a defeatist mindset. It's us being realistic about what's required of us in this moment and what's needed of us to build further and to keep building out. And so it's frustrating because I think there's, like you said, there's a lot of pressure. And I think there's an assumption. There's not an assumption. People are outright saying that we're like NDP hacks and that we love the institutions. Like, no, actually, some of us are doing this for our lives. Like, we truly love organizing students and we love organizing outside of campuses. But what would it mean for us to call a student strike and for us to fail and for Doug Ford to know that he has in fact won and that we don't have any power? We can't afford that risk in this moment.
I love a baseball analogy. And I think this with the strike is like, we don't want to swing and miss. And I think that's key, especially in this moment. Again, we have limited time. You know, we got to capture the moment before the semester ends. And I think that's kind of part of it. Also, we need to activate our base. I think Adeze put it perfectly of like, we have such a spectrum of people who are our members of CFS, people who are interested in the actions, people who came on Wednesday. And I always refer back to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, where he always says, like, what's within the expertise of your base, but outside the expertise of your target. And that's where a strike would come in handy, because I don't think that government is used to having students come out in numbers. But I also, we want to do it in a way where we can bring the most people along, because we definitely need numbers. A friend of mine always says, like, there's 3 million people in Toronto and there's only 20 of us here. So I think, like, we got to think big with our numbers here. And that's why we need as many people as possible. So we can't go too quickly that we leave people behind. I will say that something that's been interesting to see both from students' unions and from students is that people have been quick to react. Like, there are lost recipes, but we've seen some students immediately, like over the weekend, being like, okay, I got to, you know, create a website, create a bus sign-up sheet. I need to do a banner drop. I need to do banner painting. And these are folks who maybe a couple months ago were going to committee meetings, going to the Board of Governors just to listen, but not actually to do anything. So we're seeing some folks take up the call overnight, which is exciting to see. And I think that goes to speak to the, that we're not, this is not, hope isn't lost. Like, we're not waiting patiently for students to quick to action. Like, we're calling on them to do it. And some people have met the call. Some folks have been too quick. I think when the announcement happened, we saw many folks on Reddit say, okay, rally on this day at Queen's Park. Not realizing that, okay, there's a bit more steps to it than just calling a day and putting up a poster. With some of the...
Sometimes that's where you start, though, you know? Like, no shade to those folks at all, right? People just organize where they are, where they're at.
And I think that's to that point. It's like the Federation, we're not looking for perfection, right? Like, to Kayla's point, we will meet students where they're at. Like, if where you are... And where they are, honestly, is on Reddit. Like, genuinely, we were on Reddit on the weekend, like, hey, don't worry, it's going to be okay. Organize. Anyways, times are wild these days. But anyways, we're ready to meet folks where they are and, like, work with them and do that with them. And I think, like, the benefit of, not to toot our own horn, but, like, oldest and largest provincial student union, that means something, right? And so to be able to meet students who are like, I want to organize, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, where do we start, and kind of bridge that gap has been really exciting, because we're not looking for perfection. We are looking, though, to expand the politics, right? Like, we are looking for people to see and understand that, like, yes, this is about this moment, but it's about so much more than that.
The other piece I want to talk about is, like, I think, again, there is this, like, obsession or glamorization of the Quebec student strike. I remember watching it on TV when I was in high school being like, oh, I love this. I should be going to school in Quebec. I think from talking to people who were organizers during that time, they were like, this was strategic. This didn't happen overnight. This was planned. And I also think that credit should be given too for the March 4th date. And I think this is the benefit of having a provincial organization like this Federation to be able to call these things, you know, and to be able to put our strategy behind it. And March 4th is not just like a dot on a calendar. This is part of a larger timeline of this campaign. And I think that's what is really at threat with Bill 33 and the optional student fees that are potentially coming, is that they're doing this to eliminate the Federation so that the student response to government changes is less coordinated. And students can definitely do it on their own. We've seen it happen without the Federation in the past, for sure. But I think we've seen so many good wins with the Federation being at the helm of it that I think that's what's really key. Something I just wanted to add in real briefly here is that it's interesting to see this call for a student strike also occurred in 2019 when the Student Choice Initiative was first announced. But I think a piece that was missing was that it was like a high risk without the buy-in. And what we're saying is that we need that buy-in first before we can take those huge risks. We're willing to take those risks. That's what the Federation's for. Like, that's the whole purpose of the Federation. But we need to bring people along the way so it's not, they're not left behind.
I think one thing that I want to add is the popular saying, we're not outnumbered, we're out organized. And a critical piece of being organized is that regional, local level of organization. And when we're talking about people jumping the gun in this moment, I mean it in the context of you want to jump the gun for a provincial call, but you can't talk to students in your classroom. You can't effectively organize a rally on your campus with a couple hundred students. And in order for us to get to a provincial student strike with a provincial call that is a united call on certain demands, we need to be able to engage people locally and meet people locally where they're at and learn those skills so that we're able to build to a provincial context. And that's very much what we've been concerned with for the last several years leading up to this point. We keep talking about we've been laying the groundwork, but those are the recipes that are lost. And I don't think that's specific to the student movement. Like, all of us are struggling with a level of individualism and isolation that we're trying to break through. People don't know how to do class talks anymore. Their concept of organizing for a week of action is an art build and an art build alone. We're seeing some of our largest campuses in the entire country not be able to effectively bring out several hundred students for a rally when that could have happened overnight pre-pandemic in 2019. And so we've lost a lot of skills, and I don't say this again to be defeatist, but I say this to be very clear on what is required of us in this moment. Like, if you're listening to this and you're a student who is a leftist and you feel that your local students union isn't participating in this conversation effectively, that's your responsibility. Engage them. Build on your campus. Speak to other students. Organize with other students on your campus, and then reach out to the Federation, because we're happy to help you learn those skills. We're happy to lend a helping hand in those situations. If you're listening to this and you're like, block everything, maybe give it a minute and go talk to some other students and build the capacity to do that first so that we're actually able to block everything.
I want to give you space to talk about March 24th and what you are building towards there. But I also have another question, and I'm also looking to Santiago to see if he has a question before we kind of eventually wrap up. Okay. Let me just ask a question that's kind of come up for me in hearing you all speak and imagining the position you're in, especially how you see your role as the CFS. I think Adese, it was, I don't want to fuck this up, kind of summed it up for me. That's what's in my notes here. And I wrote beside it, what incredible pressure. What incredible pressure you must be feeling. Like, Rowan, I'm not even, you've got your kafia on. Like, forget, even if this is piled on top of all that, okay? Like, we can't, but let's just remove that for the tiniest little second. And you feel responsible for the student movement of Canada and specifically Ontario in this very, very difficult moment. You feel responsible for organizing them, teaching them, reading moments, finding the right one, and then being held responsible for that. How do you cope with that?
Dizzier. Are you loading?
Do you want to go first?
One thing that we've said is that this isn't about us. Like, we're not special. We are people who care. We are people who are invested deeply, not only in the student movement, but in all progressive movements. Like, we want to see liberation for all people. I want to see the liberation of my people. We are people who see the connectedness of these struggles and of these movements very, very clearly. And we also see the challenges that we are up against very, very clearly. And I think what can be frustrating about the pressure is that there are fringe groups and there are students who want to make it all about us, as though we are the exclusive leaders in this moment. But every single student on every single campus is a leader in this moment. Every single student has a role to play in this moment. And the responsibility that we bear is to try to facilitate as many spaces, as many resources, as many spaces, I say again, as possible to make that possible. Wow, I hated that sentence. To make that possible for students to answer the call. And so it is a lot of pressure, and it can be a lot of frustrating pressure in that
people can get really disrespectful with it. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I keep saying I'm an auntie now. I am not an age mate. Like, again, this is not the only thing that I do. And it can be easy to start to take it personally when you care so deeply. But it's not about us. It's never been about us. And to see more tangibly victory for students for the first time in a really long time is personally what's keeping me going and what's keeping a lot of us going in this office. Like, we keep saying we've been praying for moments like this. Like, we've been begging for students to be this engaged. And now that they are, we're going to take it on the chin and we're going to keep going because we've been waiting for them to engage us to this capacity. But Adesa, I don't know if you've...
Yeah, no, I mean, retweet. I think it helps that a lot of us organize outside of the space. And so while this is a big world, it is not the world. And I think it's important for us, we try to impress that on students as well. Like, we are just one part of such a large thing that we are trying to build here, to Rowan's point. Like, we want liberation for everyone. And so to be able to, we get the benefit to be able to zoom out and see the big picture and see where we fit in that and where the student movement fits in that. I think as corny as it's going to sound, on a typical day, we're like, oh, whatever, we don't care. We all do care. We care so much. We care so much and so deeply and often to our own personal detriment. Like, I cannot imagine anyone in this office. Like, so much of this is so directly tied to everything that we want to see happen because we so firmly believe, like, in the power of students. Like, even when it's hard, even when it's difficult, we so, so firmly believe that a free education is possible. We so firmly believe that our campuses can look and be different. I know for me, like, a student at York University, there wouldn't have been post-secondary education without all of this. Like, it's so intrinsically tied to all of it for me and for a lot of us. And so sometimes people are rude. To Rowan's point, I'm like, excuse me, if this was outside of working hours, I would cuss you clean out, but I wouldn't do that because I'm a reformed person. Just kidding. This is getting off topic. The moral of the story is that, like, we love students, we love this work, and we believe in it. And I think when you get to talk to the average student who maybe isn't plugged in into, like, the organizing of it all, but is like, no, I just think that I deserve better and other students deserve better and we all deserve better. You're like, yeah, we do. Because at the end of the day, that's all it is. Like, I believe that we all should have and be and get to exist in more than what is currently the case. That was so corny. It's ruining my tough girl persona. Sorry about that. Kayla, your turn.
We'll have to leave the disclaimer in now.
Yeah. Adesa is hashtag cool. Do not let this represent her. It's bad for my brand. But anyways.
I think one comment I'm going to say, I remember being in grade 12, sitting at the kitchen table with my mom with the lights just so dim because the light bulb was out at the time and being like, okay, how are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to afford to go to school? And because my parents, like, when they talk about working class people, I'm like, my parents are those working class people. Like, my dad worked at the grocery store. He's disabled. My mom's worked at a bank as a teller. She hated her job. People are so fucking rude all the time. And so trying to figure out how to, like, send me to university was a really big deal for me. And I think back to that. Of, like, okay, this 18-year-old version of me being like, how am I going to make my dreams come true to go to University of Waterloo, of all places? Good God, I'm so glad I didn't end up going there. But that's the kind of people I'm thinking about when we're doing this organizing, you know, are people who are literally, like, putting together, like, the smallest amount of money to be able to make it work. And those are the people who are not going to be able to go to school now with these new OSAP changes. These are people who are going to be like, well, I'm shit because I can't afford to go to education and not be able to study what they want to and having to take more loans or other jobs or, you know, that's really going to not set up their life for the world that they want to live in. And so I think of that when we're doing this organizing. Again, it's not about us. I agree. Like, it's not about us as personalities, but it's about, okay, how can we activate students so that it is truly the student movement that we want to see in the world, and how we can push that to go forward. So I always think of that whenever, you know, we get some weird critiques, we're welcome to critiques. We want that, we want that. That's kind of part of what we do. But some of the critiques are not helpful at this moment when we're trying to get as many people out as possible. So I'm excited for March 24th. We're going to see how this hits the ground. I think the key thing is, like, we did this once on March 4th. Now we need to do it again and again and again and again and keep doing it until Doug Ford backs down. And because he will, you know, like, I truly believe it. We've seen Doug Ford back down before. We've seen him back down when we went to a legal challenge. But you know what? Now we can't really do a legal challenge. So we got to do it on the ground. We got to do it in person. And I'm hopeful that we will win, because we've seen students win big before, not just Quebec, but also in Ontario here with Mike Harris Days. We've seen students win. And so I truly believe that we can. And I truly believe we'll have free education within the next 10 years, within some time soon. Like, we can't think that it's a pipe dream, because otherwise we'll never win it.
100%. I think the 24th is going to be great. I also think it's like, students are ready now. Like, TPS, you caught us slipping. We're ready now. But just on that point, like, we know that the legislature is going to return from their 37th millionth vacation. Dream job. You just don't have to work at all. And so we're welcoming Queen's Park back with a huge fuck you, which, side note, the amount of fuck Doug Ford chants, it was really funny to watch our execs be like, we're like, fuck Doug Ford, go for it. But no, we're excited to welcome Queen's Park back. Like, as long as you continue to make life difficult for students, we will make life difficult for you. And to Kayla's point, we can't fight this one out in the courts. So we're going to fight it out on the streets. And I firmly believe that students are going to win, and we're excited to see that happen. We are co-hosting this rally with OPSU and CUPE, and just, like, again, big love to OPSU and to our labor friends. They always show up and show out because they feel it too, right? Like, the massive layoffs, the massive program cuts, and so, yeah, the 24th, be there or be square. That's about all we have to say on that.
Is there anything that we left unsaid? I mean, again, tangents can open up, and there's a lot of deeper conversations around international students and, you know, what's happening to them right now. But in terms of maybe how the 24th would be different than the 4th, because, you know, some people were surprised by TPS's response, but Rowan reminded us, and if you listened to the show, you would have already known that this is just standard operating procedure, and they don't really care if unions are there. So, what do you hope to get out of the 24th that you didn't maybe out of the 4th?
I think what we are working towards and definitely hoping to see is mass numbers in a way that we did not see on the 4th. We have a lot more time to work towards it and organize for it. That includes regions that are close to Toronto. I think sometimes we have a tendency in organizing spaces, but also in student spaces, to become very Toronto-centric. But this announcement will leave nobody behind. It impacts every stretch of Ontario. And so we're hoping to bus in folks from regions that are close by so that we can make this as large as possible. But we're also hoping to kick off more regional actions. I know we have one confirmed in Thunder Bay already. And so for folks in the north, for folks that aren't able to show up to Queen's Park, we are still working towards presenting a mass united voice exemplifying student power from every stretch of this province. And again, further laying the groundwork for us to be able to build onwards and moving forward. We managed to make a lot of really critical and important connections on the 4th, like we had mentioned a little bit earlier, from migrants' rights to the climate crisis to the genocide on Palestine that continues. And we're hoping to build upon those connections and further sharpen the politic of attendees that are just being introduced to this conversation through OSAP, but certainly haven't hit their political ceiling yet. And we want to make it clear to anyone who engages us what our hard political lines are. And we also want to make it clear that it's only through identifying those political lines that we will win. And so I think for the 24th, it's, we're showing out in numbers, as united as we can be, hopefully with even better weather that we will be welcomed by. And we're excited to march. We're excited to march on Queen's Park. And we're excited to disrupt their second day back, because they are certainly getting back to their shitty business of destroying this province and our lives.
Onward and upward. I do want to give a huge shout out to the high school students. I promised they would. There are so many high school students planning walkouts and rallies, and that happened on the 4th. I know there were walkouts in Durham Region, walkouts in Niagara, and these are like 17-year-olds just making it work. They have Canva graphics and a dream, and so it's really great to see, you know, them take that up, and we're excited to work with them because these are the people, you know, we heard so many students at our town hall talk about, like, I have an offer in my email. I don't know that I can accept it anymore. Or I have a younger brother. If I go, he doesn't get to go. So which one of us have to pick? And so that's the reality for so many students. And we want to see them brought into the conversation. And they're bringing themselves in. Like, they're doing the organizing things. It's messy. It's imperfect, but they're doing it. And so excited to see them, you know, take that up and do that great work as well.
Well, I wish you all luck. We will do our best, as we always do, to boost that work that you're doing, and who knows, maybe we'll be down there at Queen's Park on the 24th ourselves. I always love a good student rally. And Rowan talking about Berry Hall had me reminiscing. So yes, it's been a while. Good luck, everybody, and I appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thanks for having us. It was so
lovely.
This
is so fun. This is our first podcast. Yay!
We get that a lot. The voices no one else lets anyone hear. We're happy to amplify this. It's our treat.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Also, a very big thank you to the producer of our show, Santiago Halu Quintero. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content. And if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.